Yani Dravidam Shrestha
Yani Dravidam Shrestha
Bhagavan Badarayana
Bhagavan Badarayana
Anyechamunaya Sutta
Anyechamunaya Sutta
Paravara Vidu Vidu
Paravara Vidu
Yani,
all that.
Vedavidam,
Vedavidam,
scholars of the Vedas,
Shrestha,
senior most,
Bhagavan,
incarnation of Godhead, Badarayana,
Vyasadev,
Anye, others. Cha,
ends.
Munaya,
sages.
Sutta, O Sutta Goswami. Paravaravida,
amongst the learned scholars.
One who's conversant with physical and metaphysical knowledge. Vidu, one who knows. Being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Sutta Goswami, you are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadev, who is the incarnation of Godhead, and you also know other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentation on the Brahma Sutra or the Badarayani Vedanta Sutras. It is called natural because Vyasadev is the author of both the Vedanta Sutras and Srimad Bhagavatam, for the essence of all Vedic literature. Besides Vyasadeva, there are other sages who are the authors of six different philosophical systems, namely Gautama, Kala, Kapila, Patanjali, and Jaimini and Astavraka. Theism is explained completely in the Vedanta Sutra, whereas in other systems of philosophical speculations, practically no mention is given to the ultimate cause of all causes. One can sit on the Vyasa Sun only after being conversant in all systems of philosophy, so that one can present fully the theistic views of the Bhagavatam in defiance of all other systems. Srila Sutta Goswami was the proper teacher, and therefore the sages of Nainisaranya elevated him to the Vyasa Sun. Srila Vyasadeva is designated herein as the personality of Godhead because he is the authorized, empowered incarnation. The Bhagavatam gives us the theistic view, or the view that the living being is existing along with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That both of them exist eternally, side by side. Never one. Krishna. I think we should just maybe forget it. It's really okay. I'll speak loud and throw the thing out of sight, out of mind. Out of sight, out of mind. So, the Vedic literature was originally one, but Vyasadeva divided the Vedas so that in the age of Kali, different branches of knowledge would be there, because no one was able to conceive of the Vedic literature in total. So then, various personalities were assigned for various branches of Vedic knowledge. And Roma Harsana Sutta, somehow or other, was appointed for the Puranic part of the Vedas. But he forgot to respect Lord Balaram, which didn't do well for his duration of life. But then the Brahmanas said, what to do? We have granted
him a boon of long life. And the words of the Brahmanas cannot go untrue. So Balaram then figured it out that the father lives in the son, so we give the long life to the son, and then that will settle the whole matter. But meanwhile, and then the son became the authorized speaker of the Puranas by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, who had heard it directly from Vyasadeva. So in this way, we are seeing the arrangements of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for disseminating knowledge into the world. The theistic view of the Bhagavatam is always establishing that there is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Jiva. Beginning of the Bhagavatam. Janmadi yashiyatun viyat itaratas chate swabhikya swaratene brahma idaya adhikavye muyanti at suryaha tejo varimadam yata avinimayo yata trisargani sadhani svena sadhani rastakukam satyam param dimahi. So in that verse, it begins with Janmadi yashya, or that Krishna is the origin of everything. And that Krishna is at the same time abhigya. He is all-knowing, and yet he is swarat, he is independent. So, we are seeing that it indicates that Krishna exists, and that the energy of Krishna exists, and that Krishna is fully aware of that energy, his energy, and yet he is independent from that energy. That creates two. The word swarat established that there is two. Then it continues and it says muyanti yat suryaha. It is said the devas, the surya, the devotees, they are bewildered by the illusory energy. So he points out that there are living beings who are bewildered by the illusory energy. And yet, and then he describes that in detail, how we see fire in water and so on, or water on the land. But we stay with the fact that living beings are under the influence of the illusory energy, even the powerful demigods under the influence of the illusory energy, but not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is abhigya. He is full knowledge. So in this way we are seeing the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. We're seeing the relationship between the Supreme Lord and the living beings. We're seeing that the living beings are becoming covered by the illusory energy, and that in this way we see the theistic view of the Bhagavatam right there in the very first verse. The second verse is explaining how we depend on this Bhagavatam and how it cuts through all types of cheating religions, dharma prujita kaitavo, namely karma and jnana, or trying some religious activity to improve material conditions of life, or trying for liberation from suffering. Basically, that also is not essential, because in the third verse, what is pointed out, what is essential is the loving service of the Lord. Nigama kalpatara galitam phalam. And then the last line, muhura hora sika buviva vukaha, because it is then ras that is established, that it is the ras that is the essence. So in this way, Bhagavatam gives the full understanding of the absolute truth. The other philosophers, they either are impersonalists, such as Astavraka. Astavraka is the original impersonalist. Long before Sankaracharya, Astavraka was propounding impersonalist philosophy. All that Sankaracharya did was to take Astavraka's impersonalist philosophy and use it to explain the Vedas in an impersonal way. Previously, there was the Vedanta Darshan of Vyasadeva, which was one philosophy, and then there was Astavraka's philosophy, impersonalism. But Sankaracharya took Vyasa's teachings and gave them an impersonal twist. Then we see other philosophers, like Kanada, are basically saying that there is only the atom. Only the atoms exist. So they are complete, it's a complete materialistic philosophy. It's everything else is not actually existing. Yeah. So there is no, it's an atheistic point of view. Then we have Karma Mimamsa philosophy, we have the philosophy where everything is predestined. Jaimini and his Karma Mimamsa, everything basically is ruled by karma. Karma is all powerful, even more powerful than the demigods, even more powerful than the Supreme Lord. Karma Mimamsa, karma simply dictates everything. But no, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never controlled by karma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is even able to lift the karmic control upon the living being. And therefore, as soon as one serves the Lord, one is free from the influence, or being freed from the influence of karma. Gradually, first diminished, and in this way, the devotees are never in the grip of karma. So all these are the viewpoints highlighted in Srimad Bhagavatam in opposition of the other philosophical views. Patanjali is focusing on yoga and the various yoga sutras and asanas and so on, yama, niyama, controlling the senses, controlling the mind for the sake of focusing on Paramatma, the Lord within the heart. But then he, in the Patanjali Sutras, he makes the mistake at one point to think that yes, we are that Paramatma. So then he has again become an impersonalist. What's new under the sun? What is new under the sun? Really, impersonalism is natural when one starts speculating. In various ways we can speculate, and we know, every book distributor knows, that you meet someone on the street who says he has his own philosophy, and then you say, oh really? And what is that? And then invariably it's the same old Mayavad philosophy, and you go like, really? Did you think of that all by yourself? How original. It's just the same old chewing the chewed, the same old boring philosophy. Everything is one. And then cross the street. Everything is one. Right? So it's all one. So you don't need to look left or right. And if you're not careful, the car will make you one with the road. I mean, it's all one, right? It's all good. Prabhupada in MIT took the Indian scholar who was MIT, Massachusetts Institute for Technology, very prestigious, and there's this Indian scientist. He says, but Swamiji, it's all one. And Prabhupada grabbed him by the shirt and pulled him up and said, is this a shirt or is it a ball of cotton? And he kept him like that, hanging in the shirt until finally he said, a shirt. Prabhupada said, then don't say it's all one. And afterwards Prabhupada said, don't imitate, he said. Old men and children get away with anything. So first you have to become very old, and then you can preach like that if you're pure enough. So anyway, but the point is, this impersonalism is everywhere, and it's just think that there is matter and spirit. And isn't it logically so that spirit cannot contain the qualities of matter, because it's spirit, it's different from matter. Therefore, if matter has quality, then isn't it logical that spirit has no quality? Therefore, if matter has form, then spirit has no form. See? I have just logically established my avat, isn't it? It's easy to, through speculation, it's easy to get there. But that is the issue. Pantas tu koti sattavatsara sampragamyo vayurta bhimanaso munipungavanam supyasti yet prapari chintya vichintya tatva govindamari purusam tamaham bhajami. With our pea-like brains, right, we cannot possibly conceive of the unlimited absolute truth. And we could never think that the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Golly wally whiz. And that therefore the material world has qualities after the spiritual world, but it is the shadow reflection. The material world is the shadow of the spiritual world. It's not the opposite. Therefore, yes, but matter, you know, like is intrinsically different from spirit. No, that's not the case. Allen Ginsberg brought up the point that how can we have the deity form of the Lord? How is it possible? Because we have here the deity, and the deity is made of matter. So how can we capture spirit in matter? And he was rolling up his sleeves and getting ready for a debate. He presented it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just said, matter doesn't exist. And that settled everything. That finished off the whole debate right there at the onset. After that. Because matter is also spirit. Everything is spirit. It is all Krishna's energy. All spiritual energy. But Krishna's energy exists in two categories. One category is eternal, and the other category is temporary. That is all. But it is still Krishna's energy. So in this way, we see that the material energy is of not much meaning to us. We can use it in the service of Krishna for a while, and then it all falls to pieces. So, but if we use it in the service of Krishna, it's fine. Therefore, there's nothing wrong with the material world. The material world's okay. It's fine. As long as we use everything in the service of Krishna. Yes, but there is suffering in the material world. Anyway, as Prabhupada said, We are tolerant. It's not going to disturb the consciousness of the pure devotee. Therefore, it is said that in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that the Prema Bhakta sees everything as perfect. For him, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong. Nothing. Everything is fine. Everything is just perfect. And he is just engaging everything in the service of Krishna, and therefore everything is great. There's absolutely no disturbance. Nothing is disturbing. So whereas, you know, that's we're not there, right? There's a lot disturbing all the time. We have a long list. Satsarup Maharaj in one, he has these at these kind of reflective books, right? And in one book, he got into that the material energy is the opposite of the spiritual world, in the sense that the spiritual world is known as Vaikuntha, the place where there's no anxiety, and then in the material world there is anxiety. Right? So he started to make a list of causes of anxiety. And he wrote down different things, you know what I mean? I can't remember everything. I remember he put rats. And it's like, you know. And then, you know, and then as he comes down the list and he has about 20 things, 20 causes of anxiety under there, then he writes, everything. Everything is a cause of anxiety. There's a magazine called The New Yorker which is making really good cartoons. And there is this cartoon of a group of people sitting around a table. You know what I mean? And it's like a think tank, you know, a group of people that think about an issue deeply. But this particular group is not a think tank, it's a worry tank. It's a worry tank. And they're sitting there, and one says, what if something will go wrong? Then the other one says, what if nothing will go wrong? The worry tank. So everything is a cause of anxiety for the conditioned soul. Bhayam dvitiya binivesita syat, because the living being is separated from Krishna. Then there is anxiety. When we are alone without the Supreme Lord, when we are not taking shelter of God, there is fear. It doesn't matter how powerful you are, still there's fear. You watch your back. Cover yourself on all sides. Fear. Fear is everywhere. Look at all the walls. Look at all the gates. Look at everything. Fear, fear, fear. Right? Fear. You can write it on the wall, you know. Fear. Everyone's afraid, you know. So much fear. The ambulance is racing down the road, and all these horrible sounds it makes, right? And everyone is just pulling over to the side because it's a matter of life and death. Getting really serious now, important now, ladies and gentlemen, it's a matter of life and death. But we don't die. We are eternal. So, what's all the noise about? There's nothing to worry about. It's all fine. The Supreme Lord decides. He decides when it's time to change from this particular ordeal where we're now, wearing this funny costume, you know, and, you know, when it's time, to change the dress. Vasam Sinha Jirnani, to change this dress. That's all. Changing body, changing dress. So how different is the outlook of the transcendentalists? And that, of course, takes time for us to get there, to get to that stage where we can be so aloof from what's happening here. And that aloofness is very much part of the Vaishnava. Vairagya vijja nitya bhakti yogam. See, vairagya vijja nitya bhakti yogam means that this vairagya, or this renunciation or detachment, this virakti, is an essential element of the Vaishnava consciousness. Because the Vaishnava is not concerned with the material situation. Only like the tortoise, only when the opportunity arises to serve, to use it in service. Otherwise, forget it. Otherwise, let it be. Let it be what it is. Because it's temporary and we just can't capture it. Let it go. So many things. Let it go. Don't just get fixed in that relationship with the Supreme Lord. One of the examples I like is when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan and he saw the Yamuna And he just jumped in the Yamuna. And then, from his point of view, he could not see a reason to come out of the Yamuna. Right? Because the Yamuna is perfectly spiritual, and what's better than being in the Yamuna? Yeah? It's the perfection of life to be in the Yamuna. Of course, when you stay in the Yamuna too long, you're going to drown. Yeah, but that's only the body. So if the body drowns, what does that matter? I'm in the Yamuna. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu jumped in the Yamuna and he didn't come out. And his servant had to pull him out after some time. When he's not coming out, you're going to die. Die? I don't die. So in this way, he said, his servant thought Vrindavan is not good for him. We have to quickly take him out of Vrindavan. He's too transcendental. Too transcendental to material life. We are not imitating, because if we would not come out of the Yamuna, it would be a deliberate suicide. We wouldn't be so absorbed that we would forget everything else, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That would not be appropriate. But looking at that sort of transcendental consciousness, Srila Prabhupada very often brought out these kind of points. In Germany, to Dr. Wolf of Rothkai, he said that the body doesn't die because the body is never alive in the first place. It's the soul that's alive and that moves the body around, but the body is not alive. There is no birth and death, therefore there are no birthdays. And so there's nothing to celebrate. It's all just illusion. Yes. Just for your information. And there's no death. So this is what we understand. But like yesterday, we pointed out that that's not the essence. The essence is just simply service to Krishna. So, you know, we should have sirens. Right? We should have sirens on our cars and drive through the streets, you know. And just like all the cars should just move to the side, because it's a matter of devotional service to Krishna. That's the cutting edge, right? But they make life and death the cutting edge. It's a matter of life and death. Your money or your life. Take my money. Yeah, here it is, you know. But the cutting edge is devotional service. That's really where it's important. And it takes a whole lot of effort to get to that consciousness where really, like, devotional service is the priority. And there's many more steps to take. You can be more saffron than saffron, more orange than orange, you know. Even your phone provider is orange. Yeah. Everything orange, you know. It's got to be orange. Your toothbrush, orange. Yeah. Toothpaste, orange. Fly only with mango. Yeah. It's got to be orange, somehow or other. Orange, orange, orange. But even if you're more orange than an orange, yeah, still, there. Just like the orange, something sour will be there. Even if it's so sweet, it will be sweet and sour. Because one cannot externally make the adjustment. So all the external things are very nice as a means of cultivation, but not enough. This renunciation or detachment has to come within to a point where all that matters is service to Krishna. loving service to Krishna, not forced service to Krishna. I'm forced to serve Krishna because if I don't serve Krishna, then I'm going to suffer. And I don't want to suffer, therefore I serve Krishna. Although I don't really want to, I would rather serve myself. But I know if I do so, I'll suffer. So I serve Krishna, you know, because I'm forced to serve Him. Yes. Yeah. Because there's the law of karma, you know. And karma's heavy. If you don't serve Krishna, you know, lots of karma. So I'll serve Him. Yeah. No. Loving service to Krishna. Loving service. Unalloyed loving service. I love it. Every moment of it, I just love it. It's just so wonderful. I mean, it's just amazing. Can I do that service? Oh, yes. Please. No, let me do it somehow or other. Yes, please. Loving service. To really love it. So, only in that stage can one actually be transcendental. In all other stages, we're trying to be transcendental. But when we are in loving service to Krishna, only then, and then only, can we actually be transcendental. Because transcendental means that the matters of life and death have no meaning to us, because the soul never takes birth. Na jayate mayate vakadachi. And therefore in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam it is said that astrology is not important, because astrology provides us the birth chart, but the soul never takes birth, therefore astrology is not important. Therefore even astrological birthdays and not important. So any questions or comments?
Thank you. See if I can find a question. Certain services that we do, they allow our affection to come out towards Krishna. So is that an indication that that service that we should increase, whereas other services we just can't connect with, so we become blocked and we become mental and our natural affection cannot flow through?
Raghunath Das Goswami says that we should not look for any sentiment in devotional service, neither material nor spiritual. We should simply focus on dasyam, simply focus on being a servant, and then in due course of time everything will manifest. So there's no need to look for some service. See, it's not about us, which service we like and which service we feel inspired by. It's about Krishna, what's important for Krishna. And maybe the service I hate is important for Krishna. It is like that. Yeah. It's like they got me, the Vaishnavas, the GBC, got me to commit for 3 years to be like a management consultant for Mayapur. I don't like it. They want me to spend 3 months in Mayapur. They wanted 4. I told them 3 is the max I can have it. And so I'm doing it. But I don't love it, because it's I've done already so much management in the past. It's like, you know, can I please just be left alone and do some preaching? No. Anyway, I told him 3 years. At 65, I retire from management. I think that's fair enough. But it's an example of my life. Of how I got to do for Krishna what I don't like. And according to my judgment, it's also not the most important contribution I can make to the movement. But okay, the GBC thinks it is the most important contribution I can make. to the movement. So for 3 years I'll submit myself to that, you know, and do the best I can. Yeah, I mean, I'll really try to do something for my whereas I think I would do much better if I would just be a full-time spiritual leader, and that it would do more for building the faith, you know, of the devotees in our movement. And faith is really the essence on which success of this movement rests. So yeah, whether we feel inspired or not inspired is not the criteria. It's when Krishna is inspired, when the Vaishnavas are inspired. And the Acharyas will establish what is inspiring to Krishna. Like, you know, like Jayadvaita Maharaj once made a remark in a lecture about this, and he said that if ISKCON, if we would let everyone just engage according to their propensity, then ISKCON would be one big band with a bunch of roadies. They have all these musicians, and then the others would be like, you know, the roadies managing the music arrangements. Put that under your belt. Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, you were mentioning when you started that the Vedas are so vast, so yesterday they gave different sections to different persons. There's a verse covered in the ninth canto about Sukadeva Goswami saying, "From him I studied this great work of literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. The incarnation of Godhead Vedavyas, rejecting his disciples headed by Pila, instructed Srimad Bhagavatam to me because I was free from all material desires." So, what was
Pila? I don't know. No, I don't know the story of Pila.
I think he's one of the ones.
No, there's Gautama, Kanada, Kapila, Patanjali, Jaimini, and Astavraka. So, what's he saying? Pila? Yeah, so I don't know Pila. No, I just have to look. I gave you the Puranic encyclopedia last time when you asked me a similar type of.
So why did he reject them? Is he saying because they were? He gave it to him because I was free from all material desires.
Yeah, no. As I say, it's like I don't know the history of Pila Rishi, so I'm not sure why he rejected him. I'd have to look it up. But the principle, in principle, we understand why Vyasadeva would reject anyone when one deviates from the conclusions of the parampara, or one becomes inimical to the conclusions of the parampara, or one becomes, which is called Ishvara Branta, or one becomes addicted, hopelessly addicted to sense gratification, then one must be rejected. So it is mentioned. So Vyasadeva used those criteria, obviously. One can only be an authority by being a servant. One can only be a spiritual master by serving the previous acharyas. And if one doesn't, one becomes asara, immediately useless. So that must be the case for Vyasadeva to reject someone. Sukadeva immediately embraced the teachings of Bhagavatam to the fullest extent. And Sukadeva was already very renounced. He already had no interest in sense gratification from before birth. So he stayed in the womb for 12 years and came out finally. Some others else, it says 16 years in the womb, came out and became a great speaker of Bhagavatam. It is said that in the Bhagavatam it is said Sukadev came out and he walked away and then he comes to Maharaj Pariksit. Other Puranas tell us that Sukadev actually in between went to the heavenly planets, spoke the Bhagavatam there to all the Devatas, and then came back down and then met Maharaj Pariksit and then spoke the Bhagavatam again. So, like that. He is the bona fide representative who repeats it as he has heard it from Vyasadeva. So yeah, if one disconnects from the Sampradaya, then one is no longer able to act as a spiritual master. So it's a challenge, a big challenge, to be a good representative of the Sampradaya.
You know, based on what you just said, we see in the, you know, this example of, you know, so many, you know, people saying so many things, you know, based on a certain pastime. The other day I heard that even Prabhupada, you know, didn't really work with the Ramayana. He also mentioned how, you know, so much has been, you know, from Valmiki. He accepts. I think we accept the Valmiki Ramayana more than the other ones. So my question is more based on who's more authoritative when it comes to these things, in terms of, because we see that, you know, like now you just said that in one instance it said that Sukadeva Goswami, you know, stayed in the womb for 12 years, somewhere else 16 years, someone else says, you know, he went to the heavenly planets, you know, like that. So how do you, where's the
Chalega? In India they're not so fanatic, you know. They don't care about a millimeter. Twelve years, 16 years. That's not so essential, that. But we accept Bhagavatam is our principal authority. So we go to the Bhagavatam. But sometimes we look at other Puranas and it gives us, or other scriptures, and it gives us like additional insights. And, you know, the 12 or 16 years, you know, I mean, are these imperfections, is one of the two wrong? Not necessarily so. Maybe he came out actually at 12 years old, right? But went to the heavenly planets, and by the time he reached Maharaj Pariksit he was a youth of 16. In others it is just the script. So sometimes what appear to be contradictions can easily be understood as summary. In a summary, you know, you kind of some descriptions more elaborate, more detail. If you give more detail, okay, sometimes. And you can, in the summary, sometimes, okay, 16. Basically meaning to say that he was 16, came out of the womb, and as a 16-year-old youth, he walked through the forest and all that. Which obviously makes a difference if he would have been a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old, because the whole pastime with the ladies bathing in the forest and being naked. At 12 years old, he would have still been almost a child and would have, like, you know, not have made such an impact. But at a 16-year-old, with the girls, that was, like, more extraordinary, that he was totally unaffected when he walked past the naked girl. So Bhagavatam says 16. So, yes, that's why when we read through Prabhupada's books, And that's why it is said that if you read too many scriptures, that's not recommended. If you read too many scriptures partially, if you become a very great scholar and you fully read all the scriptures and in the whole context of things, that's one thing. But then you have to have a special brain. An ordinary person cannot do that. So therefore it's not recommended that we read a little bit here, a little bit there. But the internet does that, exactly that, because you Google something and someone else has read something and here and there and everywhere, and you get little bits and pieces and Google it all together into like, and then you can have big debates about points. But better just take Prabhupada's books as the final authority.
Marshall, I was trying to understand the point about how the difference between the material energy and the spiritual energy is just that the material energy is temporary. But it's also described that the spiritual, the material world is governed by space, time, and thought, and the spiritual world is not. So if you look at that tree, time is only one factor.
True.
Thought, space, and thought.
Yes.
So how do we see that the material energy and spiritual energy is only different by it being temporary?
No, you would it's again the same question he asked, in the sense that now you're going into more detail. I just made a general statement. The main point is temporary. That's the main thing. You know what I mean? Therefore I said it's only temporary. That's the main difference. But if you look in more detail, say that actually Yamuna Acharya went in more detail and said the material energy is limited by time, space, and thought. So now we're going into more detail. That's the same point as he raised, actually. The general and more detail. Limited by time, space, and thought.
Sometimes sometimes you attempt to do any service and then you get distracted most of the time. It's due to impurities or motivation?
We try and do any, we get distracted from our service.
Yeah, when you try to do any devotional service, sometimes some particular service, so sometimes mostly you get distracted by
Is it due to impurity? Yeah, it's like it's due to the karmic condition we are in. But karmana daivane trena, because of our karma, we are placed in a particular body. And now this body has all these limitations. Right? In the morning, you wake up and it's sort of like all fuzzy, brain can't think, brain doesn't work, hungry. Not able to chant proper. So many things there, tired from the night before, cannot function. So, due to our karmic condition, we face all these limitations. Whereas when we're free from the body and we have a blissful spiritual body, then of course we can absorb ourselves in Krishna's service to a full potential. But the more one becomes liberated from the body, the more one is able to transcend all that and just act on the platform of the soul. So, and we see in the great pure devotees that their love for Krishna awakens to such a point that it's so strong that all these so-called distractions become smaller and smaller. It's like that water in the kitchen is distracting my mind. It's like I have to think what I'm saying. And I have to fight with my mind because of the noise of the water. Crying babies are even more powerful. They can make the mind just go blank. It's like all of us way or everything lost. Right? So like this distraction is in a sense a symptom of not being in samadhi. When you're in samadhi, everything is just gone, you know. Everything else is just gone. It's just Krishna. Only Krishna. So the more, yeah. But if you're in a body, and you're in a vata body, then the ability of concentration in the vata body is less than the ability in the kapha body. And the pitta body can also concentrate a bit better than the vata, but not as good as the kapha. Right? And the vata is worst of all when it comes to concentration. You know, all over the place. Mm-hmm. What to do when you have a vata constitution? Make the best use of a bad bargain. That's our situation. And see where we fall short. We depend on the mercy of Mahaprabhu. So with our forgetful Kali Yuga Vata constitution, we somehow or other serve Krishna. What were we doing again? Oh yeah, churning my mouth. And then somehow or other complete the 16. Yeah. That's why the counting beats help, you know. Okay. Thanks a lot.